This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
On Friday last week, the Prime Minister, Datuk Sri Najib Tun Abdul Razak, who is also the Finance Minister, introduced the budget 2017. There are plenty of debates surrounding the budget. Here to discuss more on that is the Deputy Finance Minister 1, Dato' Uthman Aziz. Dato', thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. Salam sejahtera.
If you have any questions for Dato' Uthman or for the government of Malaysia or regarding the budget 2017, you can tweet us at BFM Radio all your questions. You can also ask us using the hashtag TellBFM. So Dato', let's take a grand look over the budget first. In your opinion, what are the key highlights that you think was quite interesting for the budget?
First of all, I would like to thank BFM for the invitation this morning, and salam sejahtera to all the listeners. I think as we are aware that the basic pillar of the budget this year and as of last year as well is the capital economy and of course the people's economy, but at the same time this year, PM, our Yang Amat Berhormat Datuk Seri Najib, has added another element which we call the public happiness, where we want to ensure the people, the rakyat, that especially in terms of our security, where we don't have problems about the crimes and all that. And then, of course, we want to ensure a good environment, and then the achievement in terms of higher educations. And then we also encourage the research and development among the universities. And then, of course, as usual, we never forget about the public health. And then another most important aspect is the accessibility to the efficient public transport. And then at the same time, of course, the government also is very committed to consolidate the fiscal position. And then this year, the coming year in 2017, we hope that our fiscal deficit will be reduced to only 3%. And then we have to ensure as well that the income for the nation will be able to cover the operating expenditure. And then we have to manage the budget, debt level up to a maximum of 55% of the GDP. And then another new thing that was introduced is another, we call it the way forward for the nation, which is called a TN50, or the national discourse to go to the way forward on the how we want our nation to be after 2020 and up to 2050.
So there's a lot of issues that was highlighted. Dato', we'll take the last one, the TN50.
All right.
The TN50 budget, the TN50 plan, does it mean that there is no more Wawasan 2020?
Of course, the Wawasan 2020 is still around. We have another 3-4 years to go. But then what Yang Amat Berhormat PM is trying to put forward this time is that we got to think the way forward beyond 2020. So in this TN50 idea and intention is that he wants everybody, especially the younger generation, to participate in the discourse at all levels so that they can forward their inputs, ideas and plans of how we want our nation to go beyond 2020. So it's not. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't be talking about the nation 2020, because until today there are still people who are still talking about the national economic policy and all that. Mm. So what Prime PM trying to say is that we want engagement with all level of people, especially the younger generation, from all segment of societies, to get involved in the planning for the future of the nation up to 2050.
So does this mean that, you know, Wawasan 2020 is now fast forwarded 30 years to 2050 then?
Yeah, in a way, we have to continue with all the planning and development for the country. you talk about physical development and even her human capital development. So of course, the world is changing very fast, and then we need to be ready plan forward the next 30 years so that we are ready to move on to the future.
Dato', does this also mean that we have failed at achieving our Wawasan 2020 because the creation of 2050 necessitates us to forward think ourselves to become a developed nation by, you know, by 2050?
No, it is not a failed 2020. Because 2020 has got a different target and objective. We want to be a high-income nation by 2020. I think we are already there. We are almost there. And then what 2050, TN50 is that, I think we got to think beyond 2020. Maybe we got to make some adjustment. We got to retain what we have with the 2020. But then at the same time, also we got to consider and think seriously, plan put forward. So that when we are from 2021 onwards to 2050, we may have to adjust ourselves accordingly to the needs and then to the environment, to the pace of the world. So it is never at all to say that 2020 is a failed program. No, it is not.
This morning on The Breakfast Grill is Dato' Osman Aziz. He is the Deputy Finance Minister One, representing the government, here to discuss more about the budget. Dato', you mentioned just now that we are going to rely heavily on growth, and therefore the talent program and talent development of the country is going to be of paramount. But the public university's operating expenditure for budget 2017 actually decreased close to 20%. It is down 1.46 billion ringgit. Okay. Is this a good thing for the country, for us to reduce our dependency on expenditure for universities?
Okay, when we talk about expenditure at universities, public university especially, public universities also, of course, shouldn't be 100% or totally dependent on government. So that is why we have given them the autonomy to manage the in the each universities and to plan for their own future and all that. So at the same time, of course, they have also to plan for their own budget. And then if let's say we just rely totally 100% on the government expenditure, then it is easy for them. So maybe if they have their own initiative, they have their own plan on how to churn their own income, and then it will be easy for them to manage and then to plan with all kind of activities, not only just to produce students, but also at the same time, so they have to plan in such a way that they have to look into on how to get income on their own. In fact, for the way forward, I suppose probably we are thinking of, let's say, 30-70. 70% will be maybe given by the government, and then the other 30%, they have to look around. So that is why they are encouraged to come up with their own plan so that their income will come in, and then they can move forward.
Now, I can see why the philosophy behind reducing the expenditure for public universities will happen, because the government needs to focus on other developmental issues. But some of these universities, they're actually down quite considerably. UKM, for instance, is down 32% budget allocated. UTM is down 30%. UPM down 29%. These are considerable slashes. Do you think that these universities will therefore, you know, cut jobs, cut salaries, in fact, retrench some of these professors because they can't manage the expenses on their end?
Actually, if you look at all universities today, they are like a business entity. You know, they have their own numbers of student intakes, and then they know how much every student got to spend each semester or each year. And then, of course, they know that the students are also bringing in money, either on their own or through loans from PTPT and all that. So with that, they have they can plan in a way that with the forecast income, and then they got to plan their own expenditure, at least to break even or not to lose in the business. So, in other words, is that the varsity has also got to think in like a business entity, and then just not just relying on the grant or the what we call the budget from the government, and then from there on they plan their business. So maybe some of the varsity have got to relook into the numbers of people or the staff inside, and then got to relook into the even faculties. Some of the varsities are also opening up faculties with so many faculties without focus. So I suppose with all this constraint that we have, they may be just focusing on a few related or relevant faculties which they want to get the name or synonym with their varsities. Let's say management universities or science universities or research universities. These are the thing that I suppose they got to look into it.
This morning on The Breakfast Grill, we have the Deputy Finance Minister Wan, Dato' Uthman Aziz, here to discuss Budget 2017. More questions are coming in through tweets. Top of the list is, of course, on the declining deficit numbers on the budget. We'll discuss more after this break. This is BFM 89.9. This morning on The Breakfast Grill, we have the Deputy Finance Minister Wan, Dato' Uthman Aziz, here to discuss more on Budget 2017. If you have questions for the good minister, you can text us at 016-201-9000, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Even better if you can put the hashtag TellBFM. Dato', one such listener is asking us a very simple question. The budget deficit was 3.8% in 2013. The figure declined 3.4% in 2014. And last year it was 3.1%. Yeah. This year it's at 3.0% for budgeted 2017. Okay. Now, in practically every budget, the Prime Minister has announced multi-billion ringgit projects, including the MRT1, MRT2 projects, including the high-speed rail project, and including the East Coast Railway Link project. Yeah. These are multi-billion dollar projects, and yet our deficit is going down. Are these multi-billion ringgit expenditure being reflected in the budget?
No. You must remember that there are public expenditures, and then we also have this private-public partnership. If you talk about those public amenities, big project, MRT, LRT, those are not included in the government budget, actually. And then even ECRL, we may be involved with all these land matters and all that, but the real actual construction of the infrastructure may not be reflected in the government budget. So this is the thing. In fact, you talk about the 46 billion development expenditure for next year. If you take other consideration like MRT and all that, so the actual amount of the development expenditure in the country is much more bigger. So, and then back to the deficit, budget deficit each year, but then it's going down. And then we are targeting that by 2020, inshallah, we should be having a balanced budget. So, looking at it, I think we are on the right track, and then we should be able to achieve what we target before of having a balanced budget by 2020. So,
Dato, if we put all these items off budget, does this truly reflect then the status of the government debt?
Yeah.
You don't think that it will reflect?
Yeah, I don't think so, yeah.
Okay. No. Now, in the Malaysian Economic Report 2016-2017, as published by the MOF, your ministry, the Non-Financial Public Operations, or NFPC, financial position shows that we are climbing. Yeah. Our deficit actually leaped astronomically from 10 billion in 2013 to right now 50 billion in 2016. And yeah, this number is set to grow even further with the high-speed rail projects and so on.
Yeah.
Does the government have the necessary income to actually supplement these kind of expenditure?
I think, of course, we have to look into all this deeply, and then we are sure that we can look somewhere, and then otherwise we wouldn't be coming up with all this what we call ambitious project. And then, of course, the deficit budget does not mean it's not a good budget, because you have to consider all this in a way that you got to move forward, even though we know that the current economic situation, by right, we just just covering the operating expenditure and then with a bit of development budget here and there. But at the same time, we are also ambitious that we said that we should look into ECRL, for example. It is a huge amount of expenditure, but then it will be spread over maybe 10 years. And then at the same time, we are also talking about Pembronio, so we are talking about HSR, and then, of course, the MRT and LRT as well. So I think we have the capacity. We have the capacity, and then hopefully the economy situation will turn around and then as fast, so that we will back to the on the right track.
One thing that was highlighted by the Prime Minister in the budget presentation was on the huge number of civil servants. We've got one question coming in through Twitter asking that this seems to be huge, and more so when you divide 1.6 million civil servants with the 30 million odd Malaysian population per capita. We are being serviced by a huge number of civil servants. Is this a number that the government is comfortable with? And if so, how do you manage such a cost?
We know that a huge chunk of our budget goes to the emoluments. You know, the public staff, the public staff. And then, of course, the ratio is considered quite high. And then it may show that we are not efficient. But then we have to see into this deeply, and then go to trim down the number of staff in future maybe, and then with the help of technologies and all that. Of course, this is a challenge to us to really look into the right number of ratio so that we are more efficient, and then we can reduce the emoluments aspect on the annual budget yearly.
Is there an element of national service for the government in hiring 1.6 million people?
Not necessary. As of now, I think we still require, because you talk about those people on the rural area. We need to help them. We need to to extend services to them, and we need more number of people, and then on the ground. But then later on, as we go on, with the help of the technologies and all that, the number of people may be reduced.
There's also this number that was mentioned, over 700,000 retirees are being managed as well. And both this 1.6 million plus 700,000 retirees, this puts a total bankroll of or payroll of 2.3 million. And it puts up about 49% of the budget, particularly on the OPEX side. Is this going to be reduced?
That's why I was saying earlier that we have to relook into all this, and then it's high time that the public sector go to sit down and then look on in terms of efficiency, and then in terms of number of the outcome, of their what they call the services rendered, and then we have to trim down. Maybe if need be, we have to we have to seriously look into all this. But then of course we realize that the emolument, or as you were saying just now, 49% is on a very high side.
Right. One of the 1.6 million civil servants have just tweeted in, and she's asking, why is it that before and after the collection of GST, the amount of bonus that the civil servant government gets is actually the same, which is 500 ringgit. Is the GST collection managed properly? Because she's basically asking, why is it still 500 ringgit before and after the GST?
I think back to basics. You talk about the bonus or what you call the rewards given annually to any public or private sector workers. Actually, it should be based on the merit or on the what you call the economic situation or the income of the nation or what you call income of the entity, either a company or even we talk about the public sector workers. So I think under the circumstances with all the constraint that we are facing today, no doubt that we introduced the GST, but at the same time, we were hard hit by the what called the lower level of oil prices, And then, of course, we will be lucky that we introduced the GST. Had we not, then, of course, maybe we might not be even to pay the monthly salary. So I think even though it's slightly lower, but then still we got to be thankful that at least the government is appreciating the effort, the contribution by the public sector workers.
This morning on The Breakfast Grill, we have the Deputy Finance Minister Wan, Dato' Uthman Aziz, here to discuss the Budget 2017. Dato', a collection of tweets are coming in regarding healthcare, which moves nicely into the next conversation that we're going to have. Okay. A total of 25 billion ringgit has been allocated by the government in this budget to boost the healthcare of the people and perhaps the quality of livelihood in the country. This ties in nicely with that happiness index that the Prime Minister, Dato' Sri Najib, was mentioning in his budget presentation. Mm-hmm. At the same time, right, doctors are not finding jobs. In fact, medical graduates who can't call themselves doctors yet, surprising number, 2,600 of them can't find placements at hospitals. Mm-hmm. Is this a question of creating too many, you know, medical-trained graduates?
Yeah, this is the another new thing that's come up, that we are looking into how to put, you know, the right ratio of the number of doctors with our population. And then, of course, at the same time, the number of new graduates that come up does not match with our ability to put them on the training. So that is why now the government has introduced on the contract service for them to be engaged so that they are not just sitting around and doing nothing. They might be forgetting their, what they call their what they have learned. So this is the new introduction by the government, that we want to give them opportunities to be placed and do their housemanship 1 or 2 years, and then later will be absorbed into the service permanently. So we hope that with this introduction, it will help to ease the situation whereby when the graduate does not sit down and just do nothing.
The Director General of Health, Dr. Dr. Nur Hisham Abdullah, has said in a statement very recently that if these individuals can't find a job or can't be confirmed after their housemanship status, they are asked to go into the private sector.
Yeah.
Does it mean that we have a surplus of doctors now, that we don't need future doctors to fulfill that job market in the public sector healthcare system?
That's why I was saying just now that we have to relook into the whole needs and the requirements, supply and demand. So that we don't have to overproduce the graduates on the medical side, and then we have to relook into all the whole structure itself, whether we need to further sending students overseas or just enough to the local or what do you call the local domestic universities can what do you call cater for the future trainees. The graduate. Looking at it, at least with the new government decision to provide this opportunity for them to go on contract to do the housemans and all that, and then if at all they do not have the place to work at government hospitals, they may be allowed to work somewhere else, a private hospital, or even opening up their own clinics.
Well, one final question would be on the creation of the new grade 56.
Okay.
And therefore, if somebody, a senior doctor, is at 54, this person doesn't go into the JUSA C classification.
Yeah.
Is this a way to manage that, you know, overloaded level capacity at JUSA level for health ministry?
We know that these are the specialists, you know, the specialists, and then we have to cater them so that they just do not go away and work at the private hospital and then leaving the government hospital. And then we don't want to, you know, you're talking about the brain drain, the expertise and all that. So I think with the creation of grade 56, at least that is what we call a ample space for them to continue working in the government sector.
Right. This morning I'm speaking with the Deputy Finance Minister Wan, Dato' Uthman Aziz. Up next, we'll be talking more on the budget. But first, we have the news. Azlin Balkis will be reading it to you. BFM 89.9, this morning on The Breakfast Grill, we have the Deputy Finance Minister, Dato' Uthman Aziz, here to discuss Budget 2017. If you have any questions regarding the budget or for the Ministry of Finance, you can tell us at BFM Radio on Twitter, or you can text us at 016-201-9000. Dato, one such tweet is coming in on the housing program that was announced by the Prime Minister. Yeah. And of course, the Prime Minister has reiterated the fact that housing is very close to his heart. He said so in the Dewan. Yeah. And when I had the second Finance Minister on the Breakfast Grill a few months back, Datuk Johari Ghani, he also has housing as top of his priority. Yeah. Do you think that the measures that has been introduced in the budget 2017, which is a lot, if we want to go through them one by one, it's just plenty. Do you think this is sufficient for us to actually get houses for first-time home buyers?
Yeah, I think as you said earlier, that the PM has given the focus on the housing aspect or housing issues in the country. You talk about the especially first-time house buyers. You talk about the and financing for the what you call young graduates to buy houses and all that. So we have taken the steps to ensure that first in terms of numbers. The government has already committed earlier that we should be building up to 1 million houses within the 11 Mercy Plan. And then this is in the pipeline. And then we have also introduced not only a housing program for the people in the urban areas, but also for people in the villages or in the rural areas. As like the program on My Beautiful New Home or My BN Home through NBOS, where it's a totally new program where we are going to build some 5,000 units of houses priced between 40,000 to 50,000 for those who have lands, and then they can apply similarly like those SPNB Rumah Mesra Rakyat before. Then
Dato, you hosted a roundtable a few months back to actually set a price on housing, what constitutes as a low cost housing, and that number stands at 167,000. Now this is a number that has been produced by your office, but it seems that the developers are not agreeing to this number. They say affordable houses can go up to 500,000. Why is there a reluctance or a pushback by the developers to actually say and agree with you, the finance ministry, that the house, that low cost housing is actually 167,000?
By definition, the affordable home should not go beyond or more than 170,000. But of course, we heard that down here in Malaysia, we have affordable houses up to 300,000. Of course, one of the major issues on the construction of houses is the land matters. And then because of that also, under the new budget that was announced recently, government is planning to build houses on the government land, which is which do not have a future development program. So might as well we say we convert this land, and then we build houses, and then we believe that with the lower cost of the land, we can offer the people with a lower cost of the houses.
So isn't that the crux of the debate? Instead of making loans and all this made available home buyers, the issue here is that there is an inflated home price in Malaysia.
This is the biggest problem with us, on our part, that we want to ensure that we can provide the lowest level or price houses for people. Whereas on the other hand, the entrepreneurs, the business people or the developers were saying that they cannot make money below the 300,000 level. So these are the issues, and then we are giving a solution in a way that the government is looking into those unproductive government land that we should convert them into a housing project. So maybe this could be one of the ways to alleviate this issue.
Now, one question that I want to ask is on the JAKIM allocation. 2 years ago, JAKIM allocation was close to 1 billion ringgit. Last, it was 800 plus 5 million ringgit. Yeah. In fact, the Royal Highness Sultan of Johor asks why JAKIM needs such high allocation. And his Royal Highness's question is still outstanding. It's not been responded just yet. And this year in the budget, please correct me if I'm wrong, the budget allocated for JAKIM is at 130 million ringgit. So it's still very, very high. Any reason why JAKIM would require such high allocation?
I think we must remember that among the major component of Bajakim's budget goes to the Guru Kafa. You know, Guru Kafa, imams and all these things. In fact, we just raised, in fact, the allowances for the imam, monthly allowance, even the Guru Kafa also. And then, of course, maintenance of the mosque and all these things. So I think there is a sufficient or, I mean, enough, what do you call it, the right amount for them to manage as of now.
With the, you know, recent controversies surrounding religious authorities regarding the halal issue and a bunch of other stuff, in your opinion, do you think Jakim is enlarging its jurisdiction and encroaching on other areas of the law which is not part of their mandate?
You talk about the halal product. Of course, they are the authority given to certify halal product and all that. Maybe it is by one of the officers who have gone beyond the what you call the authority also. So we got to relook into all this, and then we must say that being what you call the multiracial country, multi-religious country, we got to be very sensitive on this issue.
One question is coming in from our Twitter follower Hasif. He's asking the one-liner project, which is on item 152, which is the rakyat-centric projects will be continued through private finance initiative or PFI with an allocation of 10 billion ringgit. This is in Inisiatif Pembiayaan Swasta berjumlah 10 billion ringgit. Is there a breakdown to this very large ticket of allocation?
Oh, no. This one, I must apologize that I wouldn't have all the details as of now.
Okay. Yeah. And finally, let's wrap things up. We have been discussing the budget 2017. This is coming in from one cheeky listener asking, Dato, in your opinion, is this an election budget?
I think for us, the government, every year is election budget. You know, we are a responsible government. We got to look into the welfare of the people, the development of the nation. And then we got to ensure that our nation is at par with other countries as well. So to me, I wouldn't say this is an election budget, because to us, every year is election budget, because we have already committed to the people that we are going to serve the people with the mandate they have given us, the trust they have given us. Then I think it is just another budget for us. Then, of course, it can be election next year, maybe in 2018. But then this is the amount that we can afford, that we can afford to offer and give the rakyat. So they can interpret in any way they want. But then I think to us it's just another responsible government budget to the rakyat.
Speaking about being responsible and being a responsible government, the former finance minister too, Datuk Sri Husni, raised some issues yesterday at the Dewan Rakyat. Basically, he's reflecting the fact that he's worried for the country. He's asking the accountability. What do you make of this statement that was given by Dato' Husni?
Yeah, I understand that he spoke in the Dewan yesterday, and that he also admitted that he was in the government for 11 years. So I suppose he had his time to do what he thought best. And then I think he has contributed, but then of course there may be shortfall here and there. But then, to me, being a public servant, being a minister, or being in the government, we have the opportunity to provide our service to the nation, and then we could have done that during our tenure. Then, for whatever reason, what he has said yesterday, but then to me, I suppose we could have done better during our time in the office.
And one final question, Datuk, for you. You were quoted by Berita Harian in June upon your appointment that you were shocked that you were being appointed as the Deputy Finance Minister. Have you recovered from that shock?
I think I've been in the office for the last 3 months. I'm enjoying every bit of my time. I'm learning. I can contribute myself to the nation in whatever capacity that I'm here today. Then I think I will do my best.
The conversation for the Budget 2017 continues. You can actually tweet the Ministry of Finance at MOF Malaysia for the questions. Datuk, thank you for being on the grill. We've been speaking to the Deputy Finance Minister, Datuk Uthman Aziz. I am Ibrahim Sani for BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.